right now, listening to the sound of Sports Report Sizzler.
My dad.
My dad.
Mr. Logical.
Mr. Logical.
Don't bring feeling to affect life.
Don't bring feeling to affect life. My dad, 2-5. I believe in Joe Henry.
Yes. Y'all hear that out there? This is the future of podcast right here. So as she was saying, you are now listening to the sounds of Sports Reports is ordered. So of course, that means that I got with me, the one and only, the world famous, the world renowned. He was born in Texas, raised in Virginia, representing everything New Jerus. And he wants you to know that after Napoleon was defeated, his brother Joseph bought property in New Jersey that is now known as Point Breeze Street State Park. He is Mr. Logic. And do me a favor out there. Don't bring feelings to a fact fight.
Don't do it.
And always believe in Joe Hendry. Live from the Alamo, I am 2-5. Your unorthodox statistician going left so much you thought I was southpaw. Let's get to it. Like, review, subscribe, share, rate, do all the free things. Do all the good things. With a liquid death in your hand, of course. All right, so Mr. Logical.
Yeah.
There is a team out there. A very young team out there that has clinched their spot in the NBA Finals. How did they do it? And are they an all-time great team?
I wouldn't say they're all-time great. You definitely got to finish. But 68 wins in the regular season, coming off the season they had last year. Very young team. I believe they were the youngest team in NBA history last year to win a series. But what I'm going to say about the Oklahoma City Thunder is that they had a perfect blueprint to rebuild immediately. They traded their aging superstars and got value for them. They could probably thank Kawhi for his, you know, insistence on getting Paul George to L.A., which kind of forced L.A. to give up, you know, more than they probably would have in a regular conversation to get them out of the contract and keep the money going, everything else. But I think they was correct. They had Carmelo, Russ, and Paul George for a year. Didn't really work out. And they said, you know what? We're going to do our immediate rebuild, and we're going to start the young guy. We're going to build around our young guy. They didn't stray away from, I'm pretty sure, Chet probably wasn't. I think people probably thought, man, that frame might be too slim. They're like, you know what? We can make it work. You know, I know he's built like a 5 as far as his height, but his body is more like a point guard. We'll try to work that as best we can. And if we need to go get a big guy, we'll go get a big guy to play the big. So I think they just managed their personnel properly. And I like the fact that they didn't go over the top with movement and moving pieces last year when they came up, you know, proverbially short. You know, because we're going to talk about Minnesota on the flip side. I like how they just handle, like, you know, we have something here. They talked about Mark Dagenau when he was G League coach. He had 21 wins and 22 wins and 23 and 24 in back-to-back years. But you know what? Something's working. He's getting through to the players. We just got to make shots. We got to make plays. We got to get the players in place. But the players that are there listening to the coach is working out. So I commend them on what I think a lot of teams should do is, like, don't compare yourself to another team. Just wait it out. Get your development in there. Get your pieces and let them learn. Let them develop.
So, of course, I can't go as far as to say they're an all-time great team until they win the championship. But this is what I will say. I think they're going to bring back the dynasty. So what I like about OKC, and I brought this up a few weeks ago, they play with the intensity of a college team, like the old school Nolan Richardson, 40 minutes of hell, the Rick Pitino Kentucky with the press. You know, they just put so much pressure on you, you can't take a possession off. And that was one of the reasons why I thought they would beat Minnesota in this way, is because Julius Randle has that old school back to the game basket But then OKC would come off the blind side. There was always a turnover potential, and it was in waiting. So the reason that I say I think they bring the dynasty back, it's not because I think that SGA is this super great, awesome player. It's not even that I think he's the best player in the league, because I don't. What I think it is when you add up what they have currently, and then you add the draft capital that they have, you know, they can still go out here and make moves. You know, a lot of teams like Boston last year, for example, they won the title and they had everything that you could ask for. So there wasn't a reason to really shake up the apple cart, if you will. Correct. You know, but when you look at Oklahoma City, I think people forgot who they took in the draft last year. You know what I mean? They took Nikola Topic last year, who a lot of people were standing in line for. So that's a reserve that hasn't even played because he was coming off an injury. So he's sitting there in wait. You know what I mean? And then when you look at the contracts, they're not in that Boston position where they're paying almost $1 billion.
You know, three guys.
Yeah, and the only real free agent of note that they have this year is the other J-Dub, the light-skinned J-Dub. You know what I mean? And you know, and it's a team option. So they could still bring him back, you know. So when you look at that, you pair that up with the draft picks that they've been collecting over the course of time. Let's just say, hypothetically, they get off to a slower start next year and they're sitting around, say, let's call it 34-20. And it's just looking like, what happened to OKC? What happened to OKC? They have all these draft picks in the tuck that they could go out and overreact and make a move. I don't want them to do that, but they have it available. They have options. So I think that, you know, they have that to build at least a back-to-back, I would say. And, you know, if they win the championship this year, they'll be the second youngest team since Bill Walton's Portland Trail Blazers to win the title. They're the only team in the last 25 years, back when New Jersey, the Nets, had Jason Kidd and those guys. They're the first team since that team to make the finals with someone on their roster, without someone on their roster with 10 years of experience. So that just tells you how young they are right there.
It's a young man's game. We talked about it in all these conversations we had with the talking about the Lakers, talking about Denver, talking about a lot of teams like East, Philly, all these preseason conversations we had. This was like Houston. I thought Houston was going to be able to do more damage, but I think they mixed in too many old heads. I was like, if they just would have ran with the young guys and just see what they had. I think OKC just was in that position where they're like, you know what, we're going to run with these young guys. Because I don't think people saw Shea in the Clippers uniform and thought like, yo, that dude's going to be an arguably an MVP last year and then win it again this year.
You know what I'm saying? And they lost that NCAA tournament game to Kansas State the year that they forced Sister Jean down our throats.
Yeah, so like I said, it's just one of those situations where Oklahoma City has it locked in. And I know, like, I went over the top with Boston with my, you know, my projections saying it was going to run back-to-back. But their shortfall is they needed everything to work. I thought they had everything that could work, especially in the East. But going 27-100 in those first two games really killed it. Like I said, if they would have gone 35-100, they would have been up 2 on the Knicks.
They might have swept.
They probably would have been just fine. I don't know. Maybe Tatum doesn't play as many minutes. Maybe he doesn't get hurt. But it's a lot of maybes there. But they also did have the hook of, like, we're paying $700 million to two guys.
Right.
Oklahoma City this year, I think they're better than Indiana and the Knicks. So I think playing their game, the way they played the four games that they won, if they play that way against the Knicks or Indiana, they're hoisting the trophy, and SGA is probably finals MVP.
Yeah, and we'll get to the Pacers in a second here, Lethal. Be patient, my boy. Be patient. You know, but OKC, I think I don't think the finals is going to be that much of a challenge. You know what I mean? Of course, you know, I think that the Pacers stylistically would probably be the better matchup as far as the more entertaining, longer series. The Knicks have the talent, but they just don't play to that talent. You know, like the Knicks should have won this. We'll get to them, but they should have won this series already. We'll get to that in a minute. But when I look at OKC and when I think of Minnesota, you know, the GM, Tim Connolly, he's the guy that put together the Nuggets championship roster. You know what I mean? So you got Anthony Edwards, but Julius Randle is a free agent. You know, Nickeil Alexander-Walker, free agent. You got to make a decision on Naz Reid. You know what I'm saying? And now the problem with Minnesota is you're kind of stuck with Rudy Gobert because of what you gave up to get him.
Correct.
You know, so I don't know how that works as far as that conversation internally of, can we move this guy? And it's like, dude, you gave up our draft capital for the next 4 years to get him. So with that being said, where can Minnesota go from here?
Minnesota is like the argument that I was making when they made the cat for Julius Randle deal. It's like, I didn't think that they got worse. I'm not saying Julius Randle was a drop off, but it's like, I just didn't feel like that move was a necessary move you needed to make. So when they made it, I was like, okay, then this is the, I'm going all in kind of situation. But now, like you said, they got to pay Naz Reid, sixth man of the year. He is your off-the-bench threat to score. Nickeil Walker-Alexander, is he your defensive? Is he your 3-and-D guy? Is McDaniels your 3-and-D guy? Is this kid Shannon Jr. your new 3-and-D guy? I just think they have a lot more questions. Ant's going to get a big check here shortly. I'm not sure what the rookie scale is, but I still imagine it's 240, 250, somewhere in that range, if not more, coupled with the fact that in a couple of years in the tat 260, he's going to get another one. So now you're like, how long do you pay Julius Randle? Or do you do what OKC did and just go younger right now? Right. You call up Houston and see if Houston want to move some of their young talent. That's not waiting on a contract, you know. But I think they're going to have to do something because they can't run it back with the team that they had because they had the 50-point game. But I don't know if they can replicate that. I think other teams are going to get better in the West. I don't know if they're going to be able to just kind of, I think LA might get better. So the team that they beat this year to make it to the Western Conference Finals, I think they're all going to be better next year.
And see, and that's the thing, right? Like, Anna's going to get better as well. You know, he's only 23 or 24. So like that's why I said the other night, I'm not trying to bang on him. You know, I'm just trying to tell you what I see. And, you know, I like Anna a lot. You know, and that's half the puzzle. You got to have the star to begin with, you know. So now back-to-back Western Conference Finals, never been done in Timberwolves history. You know, they have three in their total existence as a franchise, and two of them just happened these last 2 years. So there's no reason to get down. There's no reason to hang your head. There's no reason to act crazy. Now, I said I wasn't going to say anything negative about Julius Randle, so I won't. But what I will say is I don't know if I bring him back. You know, I got to see what else is out there, what's going on, because with these aprons that we've been talking about, there might be some guys moving that you would have never anticipated.
And they've been on the sale for sale block, it seemed like, for like last couple years.
Well, it's final now. It's final now.
It's final, like they're moving pieces.
Yes, and they're already, A-Rod's already talking about building a new arena.
Yeah, so you got to keep the star. But once, like I said, it's becoming... We talked about all these legends that are, you know, these current legends, these guys who got drafted, you know, LeBron is 03, and then Durant, Curry into the early, you know, late 2009, 2010, these guys, all of those guys are iconic, but they're all phasing out either through just talent, time. They're definitely, a lot of them definitely aren't playing deep into April. So the league is going to have to shift it, highlighting some of these young guys. So the teams are going to have to start saying, like, you know what? I know Julius Randle knows how to run an offense, but do I want to give him $38 million a year over the next 2 or 3 years or whatever that number is for him? Is he in that veteran range where it's like, oh, he's guaranteed 40? You know, like, because Kyrie is in that space when, you know, they talk about him when he got his 36 from Dallas.
Yeah, his current contract that he's on is 4 years, 117.
Okay, so that means he's probably got one, he's probably due for one more. I imagine he would want 35 at least.
Yeah,
I imagine he'd want 35, if not 40, considering the TV deal and everything else and all the other money. He's like, I don't know if Minnesota could afford that because he earned his $40 million. He just doesn't give you $40 million for that team.
Right.
Like, he did his time. He did everything he needed to do per the CBA, but it's like, you don't give us $40 million.
Right. And it kind of, with Ant being so young, you would like to think that they have a bright future ahead of them, but you know, they got a lot of questions. You know, Mike Conley, I don't know if he's going to hang it up or not, but he needs to.
Team is old. Like all those guys, Conley, Gobert, Julius Randle, are all old by real NBA standards. I think people think about all these other guys like Harden and Kawhi and all these guys have been playing for like 11, 12 years. Yeah, these guys are anomalies. These other guys are 8, 9, 10 years. They are old. They're not gonna age like the way KD did.
And Boston and OKC left two different blueprints out there for people because, you know, back in the day, it was, you know, you always talk about we got Diana. You know, so back in the day, it was we got Mike. Then it turned into, hey, somebody between Tim Duncan and the Lakers are going to win these titles. But then there was a shift, you know what I'm saying? So now as we look in the future, Boston came out last year with, we got two really good wing defenders that you can't score on, but they're going to each be able to get 30 on you. And we're just going to play 2K and put shooters everywhere. You know, OKC said, you know what? You can't score on us in the front court. So you got to get out and run to beat us, but you can't do that because we're 22 years old.
Yeah, so I got young runners funneling you guys to Twin Towers. So it's like,
right. So when you look at Minnesota now, you know, like I said, Terrence Shannon played really good in this series against OKC. He was a bright spot for Minnesota. You know, Rob Dillingham was injured some of the year. So, you know, he's supposed to be the Mike Conley replacement. So now you've got to put that in action.
I didn't think that was a good pickup.
I didn't think so either. Like, I like him. I just didn't think he fit on that team. I think with a guy like Ant, and that's the other evolution that Ant needs to take now, is that Ant needs to become more of the let me get everybody else involved. You know, like, let me, like, Jordan would have these moments where, you know, I'm going to let the game come to me. You know what I mean? Horace Grant is going to get some mid-range.
And Pippen was a threat because of size. Pippen was a threat defensively because of his size, and he was a threat offensively because of his size. Dillingham is a threat because of his speed, but you still would have to put Ant on. A game against Philly, like a Philly versus Minnesota, you still got to put Ant on Paul George.
Right.
And you might have to put him on Maxey if Dillingham is getting killed. So it's like you probably could have used that pick to get a.
And remember,
your team should look the same. Like your team.
And remember, that's what killed them last year, right? Was that game one against Dallas? He was chasing Kyrie around the whole second half.
Correct.
And, you know, he didn't have anything left. Defender.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Jaden McDaniels did a great job filling in this year, but I think they need another one of those. And I don't know if that means you pay Alexander Walker and put him in the starting lineup as well. Or, you know, I don't think they're going to be able to afford him because I think that he's going to be that Trevor Ariza guy. Somebody's going to give him $25 million and you're like, what? And, you know, he's going to be a difference maker for somebody else. I think that's where we are.
I know this is always crazy, but if he goes to a team like LA who has two wing scorers and he can just really play 3-and-D and actually guard, you know, the two, the three, the four. Yeah, like if he can, but that's the thing. Teams need to, instead of building your team to beat like the Golden State system, it's like, okay, what works at any level? Boston had it. Boston had, even when they brought in their second unit with Pritchard, yeah, he's a small guard, but he creates space and he's unconscious from three. Hauser, I don't know if he played defense all year, but if you're defending him, you got to either stay with him in the corner or run with him off a couple of screens. It's like OKC, the way they built their team is like, cool. Chet, you weigh about 210 and you're 7'10". Let's go get Hardenstein, who weighs about 250 at 6'10". Yeah. I mean, right. So it's like you just have to, and that's something that they made an improvement from last year. Minnesota, I don't think they improved with the Cat for Randall trade.
Yeah,
I think they just kind of made like a lateral move. It's like they made like a personality move. Like, you know, we think he's more intense than Cat. But as far as like the production, 23 and 12, that's what you're getting from Cat. You probably got about the same out of Julius Randle on good nights.
Yeah, and low key, Cat been killing it in this series. You know, now it's up for the rest of the team to continue to get better. But let me take you back for a second. The year was 1994. It was the fourth quarter. My favorite player of all time, Reggie Miller, 25 points in the fourth quarter, 39 points in the game. One choke sign, one nut grab. And then the little known fact that people might not remember, the Pacers lost that series after being up 3-2. You know, and it wasn't because it wasn't because Reggie Miller choked either. You know, like Reggie Miller and Rick Smits were the only two Pacers in that series to average double figures. That is insane to think about, you know, especially this era that Davis we're in now. Brothers
down low that just got rebounds. They didn't even put the ball back
up. Yeah, Derek McKee. So then, you know, you fast forward here, right? And the reason I said what I said earlier is because the Pacers had an improbable comeback in game one. You know what I mean? Like the things of dreams. Neesmith will never shoot like that ever again. You know, six threes in the last 5 minutes or something like that.
Not outside of a warm-up.
Never happen again. Game two, you know, Indiana got out of their 5-point game. You know, game three, you know, the Knicks came back from 20 down. You know, so when you look at how we got the 2-1, it was literally like, you know what? If the Knicks just actually play to their talent, they should win this series, because when you look at them, you look at Adonobi, you look at Bridges, you're like, how can the Pacers score on them? It just doesn't make sense.
The Knicks play with a level of confidence that looks like a team that belongs in the Eastern Conference Finals. Like, no one's timid. McBride comes in like, listen, he coming with a shotgun. I'm firing this thing off. If you give me any space, or I'm taking it to the cup.
Right.
Landry Shamet was like, yo, I'll show y'all how we should do it back in the day. He coming to game with his hairline pushed back.
Which is all state, busy. Baby.
Campaign is like, he's cheering, but he's like, damn, both of these dudes taking my minutes. But like I said, the Knicks play with a level of confidence. And of course, I think playing in that building gives you another juice, like another little bit of adrenaline. I just think that the Knicks two star players put the Knicks at such a disadvantage throughout the game. Jalen Brunson, listen, I get it. The offense is the offense. He can't defend everybody. Like, you know, they're going to run pick and rolls. Like,
he can't defend anyone. That's the problem.
It's so much you could do. Like, if they're deliberately putting Evan, you know, if they're putting the ball on you to screen you, and you got to run off this big screen, and you're dribbling, and you're running through contact by being defended by Neesmith or what's the ball name from Canada? The one that Mathurin. So he's spending a lot of energy. But what happens is, him and Cat both expend so much energy, and before Thibodeau can get them out of the game, they get a dumb second foul, or they get a dumb third foul. It is happening almost every game in the series. It's like me and you were talking the other day. It's like, man, Cat is huffing and puffing, and ended up getting four fouls. Same thing with Jalen Brunson. He creates fouls, but he's being defended by four guys. Mm-hmm. So even if he gets two fouls on Shepherd or two fouls on Nembhard, they could bring Neesmith on him or Mathurin. So it's like all the foul, like I won't call it foul baiting, but like he does, like he plays through a lot of contact.
He does what SGA is getting criticized for.
Yeah, it's just that I think Jalen is actually trying to score. Like he's hitting you and he's throwing his head up, but he's trying to get that left hand free for the floater or the layup. Like, he's actually trying to score and not just go to the free throw line for two free throws. He's not flailing, but he's creating the contact. But that still takes a toll on you. Then they put him in pick and rolls. And then Cat just gets, like, you know, that rebound, you're not getting it. It's already in his hand. Just go back up court. And he gets a little tic-tac foul there. He gets a foul on TJ McConnell, like coming in the lane. Like, yo, let him shoot the 12-foot floater. Like, just it's if you you're not if you haven't closed out on him yet, just turn a rebound because you get in the middle and you look and you turn to try to grab the rebound. Now you're over the back. So it just that's the thing that's killing the Knicks is that Tibbs has to worry about these two guys who I need. He needs those 60 points that he gets for those two. And he needs that 60-point potential. And he's like, I can't keep you on the floor if you got three fouls in the first half.
And Brunson set the tone last night, 14 in the first quarter. You know, like that's what you want your great player to do. You know, the reason that the Pacers can't beat OKC was on full display last night. Because when Halliburton isn't aggressive, no one else is because they're the benefactors of his play. So this isn't one of those situations where you just have a bunch of good players. If Halliburton is off, somebody else will step up because they're feeding off his energy. So
I think he took six shots.
Yeah, and their starters, their five starters combined for 37 points last night. And
I saw something on First Things First, like when Tyrese Halliburton, when he takes his first shot, if he misses his first shot, it dictates how he plays the rest of the game.
Right.
If he makes his first shot, that's when you get 32, 15, and 12 and no turnovers.
But missing his first shot,
he was 1 for 6, some layups, a bunch of free throws. So
last night, they scored 94 points. The last time the Pacers scored 94 or less was February 4th.
So, he probably had 8 points that game.
What I think happened, and I don't want to minimize the Knicks. I don't want New York to be mad at me. I don't really give a fuck, but I don't want y'all to be mad at me. You know what I'm saying? But, like, I think the Pacers just took a night off. I think the Pacers got punched in the mouth, and then they said, oh, we ain't got it tonight. And I saw Siakam.
They had enough opportunities down 10 and down 12 to get it under, and it just was like, yeah, it looked funny, and I think it's because Halliburton, just shoot the three.
Just shoot it.
Like, just shoot the rock. You're going to get control, but I felt like they were trying to squeeze some passes in. Mm-hmm. I think sometimes you could just kind of get – you can get stagnant, and it happens, and it happens to whole teams. Like I said, I say this all the time when in blowouts. I talk about this like – My son's youth sports was high school sports. Now they were in lacrosse playoffs. They won, but a guy who doesn't normally score goals came out aggressive. He got the ball in his stick and was like, boom, I got this. I'm shooting lefty, catching him off guard. So it's like when he scored lefty, everybody on the bench, they call him Hobo Joe, the kid that scored. He was like, yo, let's go, Hobo. So then he got it again. Did a little wiggle. Boom. Got
that was
another
Hobo, game. Y'all. Hobo.
Hobo Joe. So he got a couple of goals, and like our shooters who our middies who shoot from up top, you know, very talented kids, they got in the rhythm because now the defense is like, okay, they're hyped because of this guy, their chest bumping is crazy. It's 2-0. It's like, okay, what's going on? So now they're keying in on him, opening up space to everybody else. Halliburton was, you know, I think he was trying to create that by getting other people the ball, but it's like, yo, sometimes you got to be the guy. Because, you know, sometimes some of our best players, they come out like, boom, this is my game. I'm taking this guy, and I'm going to assert dominance. I know you've been scouting me. You've been looking for two. You've been looking for three. You've been looking for five. Here we are. Watch what we can do. And I don't think that Pacers did that. I don't think they took advantage of that.
And
they could have broke the Knicks' heart. If you go up 12 or 14, the audience is quiet.
And they had 19 turnovers, which is uncharacteristic as well. And you know, and that's the thing, right, is that I don't want to be that guy, right? I don't want to be doom and gloom. But they got to win tomorrow because I don't know if you're getting three in MSG.
I was thinking about that today as I was driving when you sent me the message. And it's like everyone talks about, oh, can they win three in a row? But realistically, all you can play is one
at a time. And you already got the first one.
You already got one. Mm-hmm. You just got to go play this one. Like,
and the good news is the same thing. The good news is the same thing. If you win that game tomorrow,
you're going back to your place. You're going back home. So the pressure's on because Indiana doesn't want to be in a situation where, yeah, you force a game seven and then maybe they eke it out in New York. OKC chilling. Ankles on ice. They're going to, like, they
probably have WNBA
games. Game seven would be probably the finals start June 5th, I believe.
Next Thursday.
Game seven will probably be what, Tuesday?
Monday.
Monday. So you got Monday.
So you got tomorrow. And then
last night you flew back to Indiana. Mm-hmm. You play tomorrow night. You lose. You fly to New York. You play your game Monday.
And then fly to OKC.
And then fly to OKC or you fly back home.
I guess
either way, your rhythm is off.
Right.
But if you go back home, get settled in, get back on a plane on what, Wednesday morning, just to get down to OKC Wednesday night.
If you're the Knicks and you win in seven, you still face some of those same factors, but I think you ride the wave of the momentum.
You ride the momentum.
Yeah, you want to play.
You're going to ride into a sledgehammer, but you can ride that momentum.
Right. But I think if you're the Knicks and you win game seven on Monday, I think you're like, fuck this. I want to play OKC tomorrow. Like, you're just that, you know.
And then you fly down to OKC, you get settled in, you get a practice in on Tuesday, you get a rest day on Wednesday, and you know.
And then you go lose by 25.
And then you start your NBA finals run with everybody in the building. You know New York's going to be crazy when you come back. So it's like, I think it's a lot riding on game six.
So I think that's the hope, right? Is that you just hope that some of those young dudes in OKC, like the MSG just becomes too much for them. Because MSG isn't necessarily intimidating. We've seen players come in there, like Reggie Miller I was just talking about. You know what I mean? And Michael Jordan owned that place. But what I'm saying,
But what I'm saying though
is that was 31-year-old Michael Jordan. You know what I'm saying? Reggie was already in the league 7-8 years when that happened. You know what I'm saying? I'm talking about the dudes like J Dub, the real J Dub. You know what I mean? Like,
saw how quiet the Garden got though in that run when Indiana was making that run in game one. It gets quiet. And when it gets that quiet, it's probably a very eerie feeling from, you know, it's very dark. It's like an opera house.
Yeah.
So when you're on the floor and the crowd isn't lively, it just looks like a dark room. And then now you're the home team and the visitors are just coming back. So I think they'll play well in Madison Square Garden. And guys want to play well in Madison Square Garden. It's like a feather. Like, it's probably something each guy who had a great game or played in the league and they had a good game, they'll talk about the best game they had in the Garden.
Yeah. So I say all that to say, long story short, I'm giving the Knicks one and I'm giving the Pacers two. If it comes down to that. Whichever one. I'm giving the Knicks one and I'm giving the Pacers two.
All right, I'm going to say, I got the Pacers. I got them closing it out.
Yeah, I got the Pacers closing out tomorrow, yeah.
I think they get back to the ball movement. Because sometimes you get stagnant and you look at the film, you can come back. Because that was the thing with New York. When you blow a lead like that, the way they blew it, it was like, what are we looking at to improve? It's like, we did everything we should have done with the overtime and loss. But Indiana, okay, you had lowest output and scoring in 4 months. Okay, that's not going to happen again. 19 turnovers. That can't happen again. Tyrese Halliburton only taking less than 10 shots. That can't happen again. The starters only getting with 37 points. That can't happen again. So it's like, you have so many things to point to that if you get back to your system that you know how to run, all of that stuff will work itself out. Whereas, like I said, with the Knicks, they did everything they could to win game one.
Right.
And then in the last, like, I went to bed with 7 minutes left and then woke up in the morning and checked the score. And I was like, I was turning the TV off. I'm like, all right, time to go to sleep. This game's over. Hit the button. and went to sleep.
Yeah, so, you know, and that's the problem that I think the Knicks are going to run into is that Cat and Brunson can't even slip a little bit. They can't even.
Get close to four or five. Two fouls in the first quarter.
It's over.
It's over.
And Cat, you gotta go to the bench. And we were talking about Cat and like the energy levels, how tired and burnt out he was. Like, but that's the effort that they need for him for two more games. Like, if they were up 3-2, you're like, he doesn't play well.
Plays.
Yeah. And, like, and you were talking about post, it.
But he's driving through.
Right. He's driving from the free throw line.
And it's like, man, get the ball on the block and save some energy. But he's getting that long dribble, they kind of clumsily get into the paint. But
and Miles Turner ain't going to play that bad again either.
Correct.
You know what I'm saying? So, yeah. So I think the Pacers close it out tomorrow. But, you know, once again, I'm giving the Knicks one, I'm giving the Pacers two. You know what I'm saying? That's what it is. But in other news, school is back. You know, so we had the NBA draft a couple of weeks ago. Mr. Logical and I had a conversation about how there were only 106 players that declared for the draft, underclassmen, that is. Yeah. You know, and now, you know, we're down to the 90s because a bunch of them went back. So to include some of the names of people that are coming back, Jahad Pettiford, you know, from Auburn. Hopefully he grows about 2 inches this year. Pause. You know, because those little under 6 feet dudes are getting phased out the league, even though he's good. LeBaron Filon, you know, from Alabama, depending on who you talk to, he was a lottery pick this year, just depending on who you talk to. You know, you got Yaxel Litterberg. And to Mr. Logical's point, we were talking about the NIL a couple of weeks ago. So he got $1 million because he went to UAB this past season. He got $1 million to sign with Michigan. He entered the draft. If he plays for Michigan this year, he gets $4 million. So, depending on who you talk to.
And if he played for the Detroit Pistons, he'd get
he's probably getting $2 million.
Yeah.
And so, depending on who you talk to, he was probably somewhere in that 20 to 27 range. But I think he comes out next year and he's a top seven pick. And that still might be being a little generous. My guy, Owe, back to Kentucky, loving it. You know, but what I like about it, Mr. Logical, is that the things that we were having a conversation with El Residente about are coming to fruition now. These guys are going back to school. They're going to have another year under the books. And when they come to the NBA draft, more people will know who they are. You know, for example, your guy, Alex Condon from Florida.
Yeah.
You know, he went back. You know, Walter Clayton's gone, but they brought in Boogie Flan, you know, from Arkansas. You know, it's time to play ball. You know, you got Milos Uzan from Houston. You know, national title game, you know, lost by 1 point. Now he's back with Emmanuel Sharp, you know, saying, and JoJo Tugler. So Houston's right back in the Final Four talk now. So like what people were talking about is, you know, 1 year, you know, North Carolina's here, and then you blink, and then, you know, like Wichita State or somebody comes out of the blue. But now with the NIL, so people focus on the money. They don't want the players to get paid, but they're missing out some of this other stuff like, hey, now we're going to run these teams back just like we used to.
So college basketball is going to definitely benefit. I know a lot of the NIL, for lack of a better word, naysayers reference college football because we tend to know more college football players by name. They play less games. Their games are more impactful, and they play all day long on one day. So we get, you know, granted some off days, but for the most part, Saturday we're getting Alabama, Michigan, USC, LSU, Boise State. Everybody's playing on one day. We're going to hear all these names on one day. And then you're thinking about your NFL team. But the NBA, I don't even think it's the notoriety that's keeping these guys back in school. I think it's simply I'm going to make more money, play less games, be less stressed, and be more vital to my team's success. If we look at the last, okay, last year, right?
Right.
Let's go top 15. Zachary Richechet, number one overall. How many highlights did you see of him on TV?
I'm going to go with zero.
Alex Saar.
I'm going to go with zero.
Reed Sheppard was in the G League. They said he couldn't find a spot for him on the floor in Houston. Stephon Castle, rookie of the year. Ron Holland went fifth. He was in the G League.
His highlights were getting into fights.
The Hornets drafted some guy, Tanjaze Salon. He's somewhere in France or somewhere.
No highlights.
Donovan Clingan, no highlights. Rob Dillingham, we talk about that. The Spurs drafted him, traded to the T-Wolves. He was non-factor in the playoffs. Uh-huh. Cody Williams, number 10. Zach Edey got some run.
Cody Williams might have been the worst first-round draft pick I remember. And then, by the way, that's J-Dub's little brother.
Yeah, so Dalton Connect. They tried to trade him off.
For a guy that's hurt all the time.
So if I'm talking to an agent, or my agent's talking to a scout, or a scout's talking to me directly, or I'm a coach, and they're telling me, hey, right now your grade is 13 and 19 in the NBA draft. It's like, well, 13 and 19. Jacoby Walter, Tristan Da Silva, Dalton Connect, Jared McKay. Like, none of these guys got any run. So I could transfer or come back to school, and you'll give me 1.7 million, 1.8. I'm going to play 32 to 36 games. I'm going to be the big man on campus.
I'm going to improve.
Even if I don't improve to the NBA level, I'm improving enough for Bill Self in Kansas to want me to transfer in to be a graduate student and get another $2.5 million from them. So I can finish my last 3 years in college and get about $6 million, or go to the NBA, be on the hook for 7 months and not get any run, and I can't go do what I want. Man, nah, I'm good. I'm going back to school.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's more about the way the NBA uses their young players than it is about development. Because we talked about it when they say, oh, a guy is 22, he's been in college so long, he would have been a lottery pick years ago if he didn't stay in college so long. Or why did he stay in college so long? Maybe this is his ceiling. And these guys are like, all right, cool. I'm going to go ahead and transfer from Iona to Florida, win a national championship, take my $4 million, and take my baby girl to Disneyland.
Yeah, and they still talking about he's going at the end of the first round. And you know, and that's the thing, is that the NBA draft is starting to become like LinkedIn. You know, like there is
God, no, don't get me started on LinkedIn.
There is no
God entry damn level. Worst website in America.
Yeah, there is no entry level. The entry level does not exist, you know, because now companies are looking at potential candidates and they're saying, what can you do for me? Not what I can teach you, because it takes me too long to teach you. I gotta invest in you to teach you. And how long are you gonna be here? A year or two? So when you look at the NBA draft, a lot of these guys are where's the 18-year-olds? Where's the 19-year-olds? Because, you know, usually if I'm drafting you at number two, you're either a phenom or I think you're gonna turn into a phenom. I don't wanna take the guy that I feel like I gotta coach up. So now when you're looking at the NBA draft, I look at dudes like, say, Caleb Love, you know, who's been in college for 5 years, played at Arizona, played at North Carolina. So you would like to think there's some pedigree there. You know, I told you about him during the NCAA tournament. I'm like, for whatever reason, yeah, when he plays Duke, you know, he turns into a machine.
He was, you know, a big game, I mean, player.
Yeah, so you know.
But the NBA won't let him play a big game.
Right.
The NBA
is my problem.
16 minutes. This guy's getting 40 million, so he gets this many shots. This guy's getting 46 million, he gets this many shots. Your development is not our – I'm here to keep my job, so I'm going to follow the blueprint of the guy ahead of me and the analytics guy in the booth.
So I think that, you know, what you're going to run into, hopefully, is what I'm hoping, guys like him, guys like LJ Cryer, you know, who might be 22, 23 already, maybe even 24, you know – with this new apron, all this, like, you're going to have them, what, 4 or 5 years probably before they move on anyway. Why not make the most of it? You know, you got to change the way that you're building your teams now with these aprons. But the question that I have and that I've been thinking about is, what does this do to the G League? You know, does it make the G League, not that it's like super awesome or entertaining or successful or any of that type of stuff, but does the G League become worse? Do you have better players at the G League level?
I think the G League becomes better because if you had, like I said, it was 140 or 100, it was like 120, right? That originally signed up.
It was 106, yeah.
106.
Yeah.
So say it was 166. Well, a lot of those guys might flow into G League spots and they might bump a guy out who got drafted a couple of years ago, still trying to develop. But with those 60 or 70 guys not even putting their name into the hat, it allows me as a G League player to keep my spot, stay with this coach, stay with this organization, stay with this shooting coach, stay with this teammate, build that chemistry. So when the Charlotte Hornets need to call a guy up, and I've been here 3 years, I've been working and working and working, now I get my shot versus them grabbing a guy like, you say, this Tanjay Salon guy. Now you just grab him because he was on the list. And now because you drafted him six and you don't have a spot for him in the actual city of Charlotte, you send him to your G League affiliate. That bumps somebody out of the spot who's been working at it. But like if I take a guy six, I need him to mold. I got to put him somewhere. So right. Somebody's going to be losing a spot. So if guys are going back to school, getting that, you know, $500,000 from Arizona or getting a $250,000 to stay at Wisconsin, whatever the number is, that opens it up for the G League players. It's incumbent upon the NBA to do a better job from a management standpoint, an ownership standpoint, and a media coverage standpoint to get fans excited about the NBA again. Because I saw Jamie Foxx, he posted something on Instagram talking about, aren't there NBA playoffs going on right now? You guys still talking about LeBron and the Lakers. They've been out for 2 months. So you're not going to have the KD to drive the numbers. You're not going to have Kyrie. I said, we don't know what his injury is. You're not going to have that to drive. You're going to have to highlight. You're going to have to put Alex Saar versus Jack Rivisha, say, on your prime. Like, you're going to have to either
number
put
one
it
versus Saturday number two, afternoon. Right?
You're going to have to just say, you know what? We don't care what the audience thinks of the city. We need to get these teams on TV. Because the NCAA is doing a great job of making sure, because it's all institutionalized. Kansas is making sure their star feels appreciated. Mm-hmm. Duke is making sure their star feels appreciated. North Carolina, right. Arizona, Washington State, they're all looking out for their product.
Right.
The NBA as a whole, but from media, management, and ownership, it's a complete disconnect. There's three fragmented parts that they could be pushed together and they could work, but right now they're just fighting uphill, worrying about who has the most power. Meanwhile, you're going to lose your audience.
But now I think this is where people like the one Mike, you know what I'm saying, Mondays and Thursdays at noon, I think that's where people like him are going to get upset, because he's been frustrated over the last couple of years talking about how the international players are taking over. Adam Silver's, you know, trying to, Adam Silver, I always want to say David Silver. Adam Silver is, you know, trying to globalize the game. So we're going to see these guys. And I think that's a part of what happens when these guys go back to school, is that we're going to start to see some of these Nolan Traors and Noah Nsingue, who are going to be probably first round draft picks this year in this draft. You're going to see more of those guys getting first round grades and shots because of the lack of depth. So I think that this particular draft is still going to be a good draft. Obviously, I don't think it's going to be as good as I thought it was just 2 weeks ago. You know what I mean? But I think that there's still a lot of good players in this draft. I think there will be a lot of good players going forward. I think there's going to be an overreaction. You know, I think people are going to see some of the names going back and they're going to go, like, this draft is going to be awful. And then we're going to look back in 4 years and go, whoa, like, some of these dudes actually panned out.
And I want to believe you. I want to believe in your optimism. My only issue is that when they get to the league, is the league going to let them be a part of the league? If I'm Adam Silver, I'm like, yo, my top 10 draft picks, I need to be able to book every one of these teams for multiple nationally televised games. I can't sit here and wait for, you got Tatum that's injured. So that hurts Boston's kind of appeal. Jaylen Brown is a great basketball player. He's a great mind. I don't think he had the same appeal because he doesn't clamor for that. He doesn't do the face of the league. He doesn't put himself in the conversations of like, why am I not this? That drives these conversations that Tatum was a part of over the last few months.
Right.
Then if you look at New York, even Jalen Brunson and Kat being in New York, their personalities are not big city personalities. Melo, big city personality. Popular wife. She was in the hip hop scene. She was in the music scene. It was like, okay, that's a match made in heaven. Kat has a social media girlfriend, but he's not a New York City guy. Like, so Philly's a tough, gritty city. They got the most fragile superstars. And those guys are old. So Tyrese Maxey, but he's undersized. That they're not really pandering to undersized guys. Kyrie has that spot. It's Kyrie and Steph. Everybody else, like Trae Young, is doing his thing down in Atlanta.
That's why Philly got to go get Ace Bailey.
If I'm Adam Silver, I'm like, listen, I want these draft picks in these cities, and I want you guys to put players around them, put them on the floor. I don't care if you go 7-16. It's better than him being in a Balenciaga hoodie on the bench, DMP. Like, he's just taking the money and buying clothes and jewelry.
You sound like you sponsoring tanking. I mean, no. Rigged. I mean, my bad. That's what I meant to say. You're sponsoring rigged.
I think the lack of creativity is causing these coaches to keep doing the same thing over and over again. Harden has played, he should have had a backup that took 8 to 12 more minutes away from him to get the next guy develop.
James Harden's going to be playing over
30 or 40 minutes.
Right. I think this is where the league is headed, but it's too late for people like him. But to your point, though,
late for the teams because no one's Jokic can't sit down.
Right.
They just won a championship 2 years ago. He can't go to the bench because you won't develop anybody else. Somebody else on that team has to be able to get you 11-8 off of the bench.
But to your point, though, that you were talking about, right? You got Dallas with the first pick. You know, one of the biggest growing metros in the country. You know, you got the Alamo at number two. You know what I mean? Like, literally just 18,000 people less than Philadelphia coming up in the world. So, you know, you got your top two picks right there. You know, provided that the Spurs don't trade for Giannis. You know, you got your top two picks going to those two cities. Then, you know, you got Philly at three. You know what I'm saying? Gets a little, you know, cities that you don't care about. And then you get the number eight, you got Brooklyn, Toronto at 9, Houston at 10, Chicago at 12, Atlanta at 13, San Antonio at 14 again. And then right at 15, lurking in the shadows at number 15, the soon-to-be champion Oklahoma City Thunder. So I think that this particular draft might be set up for what you're talking about. Then you got Brooklyn at 19, you know, provided that they don't trade these picks. Then you got Brooklyn at 26 and 27 again, and then you got them at 36. So Brooklyn has 5 of the top 36 picks, you know, so they are either going to draft a bunch of people that hopefully pan out, or they're going to make moves and get rid of some of those draft picks to get some talent in because they got that $95 million of cap space.
Yeah, but the talent they're going to get in, they're going to trade and get a guy like Bradley Beal, or they're going to try to trade and get a guy like Zach LaVine, or trade to get DeMar DeRozan. They're going to trade to go get a guy that they feel like, oh, he's been in the league for a while. For
months, man. They call in Cream City.
Was that? They trying like, to get Giannis?
Yeah.
Okay. Even with that, that puts Giannis back in the same boat that he was in where they're going to be out.
Right. Either not right. Making I'm just the playoffs to your or point. Out. I'm just speaking to your point about Adam Silver. You know, like I want these cities to be the cities of stars and TV marketing, all that. So if I could get Giannis to Brooklyn.
If Brooklyn would have just played Cam Thomas, he'd probably be closer to SGA right now. But they he dropped like 40 points in back-to-back games and didn't want to play for three games. It's if Cam I don't Thomas, care if he plays no defense. Just exhaust the other dude out. Like
Cam Thomas, Cam Thomas is J.R. Smith with an even worse brain.
Listen, I don't care. The dude is getting me 40 points. Whoever he's guarding, he'll eclipse whatever that guy. If that guy's giving me 17 and he could give me 33, I'll take the plus 17 in your matchup. Like, like I'll take that. Like, everyone keeps fronting like they want everybody to play defense. Cut it out. You want everybody to shoot.
We do.
Threes.
Two sides of the ball, baby.
You want everybody to score.
Look at who about to win the NBA title.
Well, the SGA isn't out here shutting people down. He plays good team defense.
He had more blocks than Giannis.
He's an active, he's an active defender, but he's not going to go out there and lock Tyrese Halliburton up all game long when they make the finals.
We're looking for. We just want the appearance that you care about defense.
I'm talking, but I'm talking about if you're a coach, it's like I just feel like analytics have ruined just good quality basketball because a 15-foot pull up, two dribble pull up. Is a better shot than a 23.5 foot three. Like I don't care about the numbers. The shot is better. You have more guys on your team that can consistently pump fake, two dribble pull up, and knock down a 15 footer than you have guys who can consistently in and out, game in and game out, on the road, hostile environment, knock down the clutch three. That 15-foot two-dribble pull-up, every single guy on your team can hit that shot. And it's like, nah, we don't want you to take it. It's just stuff like that just doesn't make any sense because you can lose a game by one. I bet you love that 15-foot pull-up then. So, yeah.
The
coaching needs to change. I think they've all kind of went, like I said, we talked about the Indianapolis Colts. Everybody wanted to go and throw – you know, four or five wide receivers out there and a tight end that can run the scene. Yeah, y'all don't have Peyton Manning. So some of y'all need two tight ends and LeGarrette Blount. And that's what the Patriots did.
You know what I'm saying? We up here talking about basketball and this man still find a way to shit on Kyle Pitts.
Man, I didn't even read Kyle Pitts.
Yes, but on that note, y'all. Oh, man, that was hilarious. You know, I'm cheering for Brooklyn, mostly because I hate the Knicks. So, you know, I'm hoping that Brooklyn becomes relevant and, you know, can get this draft thing figured out. But we'll be back on Tuesday to talk a little bit more about it, you know what I'm saying?
What?
With our babies, you know what I'm saying?
I'm not a baby.
You're my baby. He is.
But I'm seven. I'm not a baby.
The world renowned, world famous. Do not bring feelings to a fact fight.
Say, don't bring feelings to a fact fight.
Mr. Logical. Of course, I am 2-5. We are Sports Reports is Ordered. We are here for you. We do love you. Enjoy game 6. We'll see if we get a game 7. Either way, they get mopped by the Thunder. See you soon. We love you. Like, review, subscribe, share, rate, do all the free things.
You said that in a good
do all the good things. And you know what?
I'm trying this out.
Even the little ones. Even the little ones. Love the liquid death. Yes. See you in a few days, y'all. Be good out there. Peace.